We're very excited to have in our studio today the Tony Award-winning director Bart Scheer, who is directing Romeo and Juliet, coming to the Lyric Opera of Chicago. Very excited to have you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Tell me about this production. What is unique and different, and what will people want to see in this production of Romeo and Juliet?
Well, I think people expect opera to be what they call like park and bark, and where you like come down stage and a lot of focus on singing and a kind of, I think people are a little sometimes intimidated to some extent by the experience of opera. But I do feel in Romeo and Juliet that that is not the experience you have of this particular opera. It's the kind of show which is enormously dynamic, incredibly passionate. There are extraordinary fights and dynamics happening in it. And when I watch it, I go, oh, this must be why people like opera, that you have this extraordinarily beautiful music, this incredibly passionate love story, which is tragic. And I find myself crying, but I'm actually strangely happy.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say it's tragic but beautiful.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. The music that Gounod wrote in the 19th century is so ravishingly great and beautiful. Lyric has brought some of the best singers in the world here. And we have B.H. Barrie doing these fights, and he's like old hand at this these kind of stage combat things. And you really experience it like the kind of great Zeffirelli movie in the 60s. It's extremely passionate and fast, mm-hmm. and literally page-turning. And I find this iteration of the play itself to be in some ways more satisfying than even the play.
Every time I go to the Lyric Opera of Chicago, I marvel. It's such a beautiful venue at which to put on a production, especially a production like Romeo and Juliet.
It's perfect it's a perfect venue for it. But the experience always, I think, of people who go to see an opera is they're a little worried they're not going to quite know enough, mm-hmm. or that there's some secret magic thing they're supposed to understand when they go to the opera. And I think they have to like let that one go when they come and see something like Romeo and Juliet. It's enormously accessible and makes you go, oh, I see, singing at the most extraordinary level and acting at the most incredible level with incredible stagecraft is actually quite a good time.
It's such a moving story. Is your production, does one need to have to know anything about Romeo and Juliet? Or maybe the opposite. Maybe people say, you know what, I've read Shakespeare, I've read Romeo and Juliet, it's not really for me.
I always think if a show that I'm doing is any good, uh-huh. you don't need to know anything before you go. You should walk in the door, sit down. Yes, you will have to read the surtitles because it's in French. But the fact that it's in French makes it, frankly, a little bit sexier. And you follow the story for the version of that version of Romeo and Juliet. I don't think it's worth comparing it with the Shakespeare, because when you do a new iteration or a new adaptation, you're doing your version. So certain things are emphasized, other things are not. And I find it extremely moving. And no, you don't need any help. You should show up, buy some cheaply priced ticket from the opera company, whatever the hell they are.
It's well worth it.
And you will get an experience you cannot get anywhere else.
I find myself, even though I know the story or may have known something about the story, I always find myself reading the surtitles, and it helps me, even when it's in English. I know this isn't French, but I know in English, it helps me with the songs and go along with it. So I'm one of those, I do glance up and start reading it. And I love the fact that that is provided, that you're able to see that. It's another visual of the
production. I think, Fellini used to say, because Fellini's movies always had, subtitles,
yep,
as they called
brilliant.
Them. He used to say if they didn't have them, he would have invented them, because it allows you to have this experience of another culture, another language, mm-hmm. and simultaneously know exactly what's going on at the same time. And I think it's always like having more than one window open on your computer at the same time. We can look at 12 things at once and still take in all the information at once. So glancing up to see the surtitle is not that much work.
We're okay.
It should be something we're used to.
Exactly.
Because we see seven things at once.
Sure,
and
look at your
phone,
entering
my
goodness.
Piece. Yeah,
absolutely.
We look at our phone and we're switching nonstop. Our capacity for speeding up is,
yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing about opera that I find kind of incredible is it's kind of like purposeful detox from contemporary culture. Like you go in, you're looking at your phone, you've been on your computer all day, you've looked at 25 things at once, your attention span is frayed to an absolute zero, you can't concentrate on anything more than 3 seconds, you sit down in there, and within 20 minutes you're actually, your entire personal time signature is reorganized and you fall into a different rhythm from another time, and you actually become the possibility of beauty and poetry and great music enters you. Because if you were to try to do it at home, you couldn't do it. You couldn't concentrate long enough to pull it off.
And love and tragedy, yeah, and all of the
all
elements
things suddenly
that are in
become
there.
Possible. Because right now you barely look at your significant other because you're too busy looking at your phone.
That's very true. What type of a director are you? Do you let your actors do what they want to do, or are you more stick to the script? We have to follow this verbatim, or do you let them kind of do a little bit of both? Not complete improvisation, but just a little bit of taking on the character and making it their own.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. The weird thing about directing is directing is an interpretive art as opposed to a creative art. You have to separate these two things. The creative artists are like the composers and the writers and things like that. They're weird, rare breed of their own. I, as the interpreter, have this pre-existing reality called a text or a score, and I have to get it from the page somehow into people's bodies and in the world. So I'm in this kind of constant dialectical transactional experience of moving from one to the other. So I don't really narrow it down to either. I'm going to be faithful to the text, but I'm going to be drawing out of the resources I have, the kind of singer, the world that I'm building. And you try to make this marriage, this unified, autonomous thing that only makes sense in front of you. And so answering that question is quite hard, because after doing this for 30 years, you're like, well, to get from there to there is a very layered, complicated experience, which relies on, it may be that I have an actor who needs more help than someone else. And so I will be more intensive in that, and others who bring me so much that I'm actually trying to edit their work. And I have to marry all these different forces into one thing, so that when you go and see it, you don't think about whether they're acting. You don't think about whether they're even singing. You're so lost in the experience of what you're watching, either intellectually, emotionally, personally, that you are just gone. So by the end of it, you find yourself sobbing. You didn't realize you were even upset.
I love that. Is that what you want people to take away from it? Somebody, maybe perhaps everyone will have a different interpretation or take something different away from it.
No, I mean, the interpretation of the tragedy of Romeo and Juliet is the kind of tragedy which reminds you, it makes you see the painful way that it is to be in the world, experience it on some deep level. I can't say, so you watch it and you realize the choices, you know, what if, you know, the letter had gotten to Mantua, what if, you know, they hadn't done this and they hadn't done that, and they find themselves out of their passion in these incredibly complicated circumstances, which leads to their death. And you can, through this fiction, recognize and understand other tragedies that you see in your life all the time and feel like you have a capacity to resolve the two things. Because it is hard to understand tragedy.
Yes.
Why do we have it? Why did these things happen?
It's a story that withstands the test of time, and we could perhaps equate it to something, we were talking off the air about politics. Something.
Yes.
Modern day
politics, which is why do the Montagues and the Capulets not get along? Why is it that the Republicans and the Democrats have no clue about how to talk to each other, and all they want to do is feud and challenge each other? So this Democrat, you know, from Vermont's daughter falls in love with this Republican from the Deep South, and they hate each other, and they somehow end up in love, and then they die. And so one way of looking at Romeo and Juliet is as a social tragedy. It's a tragedy of the community who are unable to allow something to come together.
I think at the end of the run, you need to be a chief of staff for one of the politicians. You have great solutions.
I mean, if they could help, if I could help, I'd be happy to. If called upon, I will serve.
This is a wonderful production. I have to ask you, when you won your Tony.
Yes.
Shock, surprise. Go. What was going through your mind? I always want to ask you.
Okay. Well. First of all, I had been nominated for a Tony twice before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these things are like a race, you know, so everybody's handicapping and deciding what's going on. And South Pacific was extremely popular the year that I won. Mm-hmm. So my real worry was not winning, because everyone had expected I was supposed to win.
Oh.
So when they actually announced my name, I was like, thank God,
yes,
that's over with. Because I would have had much more to deal with not winning.
Exactly, right.
And I also always think that, especially if you're in the middle of these, people don't understand about these crazy processes of these award ceremonies, which are essentially marketing platforms for major industry, that winning is not very important. Being a part of it is good.
Yeah.
So it's okay, you know, to just feel honored to be there and not and that's really true.
Do you keep it in a special place? I know a lot of celebrities keep it in either in the bathroom or on the mantle.
I keep it from making me think anything better of myself than I should. How's that?
That poet, wow, I can see why you're the director.
It is in my house where no one would take it.
Exactly.
And so that my kids can have it. Yeah. And so that kind of thing. But I don't have any sort of fake humility about keeping it in the bathroom. I'm very proud of having won it. But it doesn't mean that I'm any better or worse than I.
Have you had a chance to take advantage of all that Chicago has to offer? Our pizza, our hot dogs. Leave our weather alone.
No, I spent all of my time like wandering from, you know, this weird monk-like cell apartment to the Lyric Opera like studios. But I have found, I think it's Randolph Street. Is that the West Loop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've eaten like
the restaurant district.
800
yes.
meals in this like one block area. And the food is extraordinary here. The food is absolutely extraordinary. I'm certain that it's better than anywhere in New York. I mean, I find the food and the celebration of food and the idea of food to be incredible.
We're a big foodie town.
Yeah.
As well as a theater town as well. Romeo and Juliet, February 22nd through March 6th, March 19th at the Lyric Opera. Bart Scheer, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Go see Romeo and Juliet.